My name is Mike Thornton, and this is Full Logic Reverse. We hope you'll stay tuned.
Oh, hello there. I think the CIA is after us because... Hello?
What the heck's going on?
I don't know, but Tom, I'm trying to think who it is who's after you because something really strange is happening.
Our lines are crossing.
I think probably what we're going to need to do is go to some music. I'll be back with you shortly.
Give me just a second.
Okay.
Okay, that should take care of it.
Okay, are we cool now?
We're cool.
All right, we were just doing a song about the Kennedy assassination. I thought maybe the CIA and the FBI were after either you or I or both.
Oh, these days I wouldn't be surprised.
Well, I wouldn't either. We're talking with Tom Murlowski of the November Coalition. Once again, you are tuned to community-supported radio, KVMR-FM, Nevada City, Auburn, Sacramento. The number's in the studio, 265-9555, 1-800-355-5867. And if any of you CIA or FBI guys want to call, hey, call up.
Oh, absolutely. Let's talk to them.
You bet, because we're going to be talking about the so-called war on drugs and absolutely something I think that needs to be revisited. Tom, can we talk about the November Coalition first?
Oh, absolutely.
Go ahead and let the people know what that's about.
November Coalition, we advocate for the prisoners of the drug war. As you may or may not know, we now have the largest prison population, both per capita and in raw numbers, in the history of the world. And this is what we call the land of the free. And on the federal level especially, and also on the state level, by and large, a majority of those prisoners are nonviolent drug offenders. And we pretty much advocate for alternatives to just this lock them up and throw away the key attitude.
One of the things that the November Coalition has done has produced a CD of which we have aired many parts of it, The Voices of Drug War Prisoners. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. This was a project one of our representatives did out of L.A., John Humphrey. And he just had, we had a call out in our regular newsletter, The Razor Wire, just for prisoners to call a dedicated number and just leave a message on their situation, what it's like being in prison, what it's like being torn away from your family. We had an overwhelming response to it, and we're presently in production for another volume, a second volume. And it's just a way to let the people know that these people that are locked up in prison are human beings. They have families that miss them, that need them. And it's just terrible that we're locking so many people up.
We're speaking with Tom Murlowski of the November Coalition. Tom, in listening to the voices of some of the drug war prisoners, which was on the CD that you sent to us here at KVMR, I mean, it's amazing. I'm one of the guys. I mean, he had, three or four life terms plus 50 years plus 40 years plus 30 years and, you know, so on and so on and so on. And as far as I could tell, I mean, basically, this guy was a first-time nonviolent drug offender.
Absolutely.
I mean, the sentencing that's going on here is absolutely crazy.
Whatever happened to giving people a second chance? And as you may or may not know also, once again, on the federal level, only 11% of the drug war prisoners are considered high-level leaders or kingpins. And do the math. That means 89% of the people in prison for drugs are low-level offenders. But because of the mandatory minimums, the sentencing guidelines, all the stuff enacted by Congress in the 80s, these people get punished as if they were big-time drug dealers.
Talk a little bit more about mandatory minimums so people can understand that.
Well, mandatory minimums and the sentencing guidelines are two different sentencing structures that were both passed within a year of each other in the mid-80s, kind of at the height of the drug war craze under Reagan and Bush. And what they do essentially is completely remove discretion from the judges. In other words, if you get caught with, say, 40 pounds of cocaine, you get sentenced based on that weight, and your role in the offense is almost irrelevant. The judge can't take into account any other factors as far as chances of your rehabilitation or so forth. And an awful lot of people in prison for these offenses are there without even knowing what the amount of drugs was they were involved in. Simply driving someone to a drug deal or something means you were part of the conspiracy. You go to prison based on 40 pounds of cocaine.
As I understand it, a number of the drug war prisoners in federal prisons are women. Primarily, their only role in in some of these drug offenses, for lack of a better way of saying it, is that they were in a relationship with somebody who may or may not have been involved, correct?
Absolutely. Women are the fastest growing segment of the prison population right now. And quite often, a dear friend of mine, which how I got into this, is in prison, actually right down the road from you in Dublin, California. And she wrote an article for our next newspaper, and one of the things she says is there are women doing five-year terms in prison because they answered a phone, passed it on to their husband or boyfriend, and it turned out that that phone call was about a drug deal. Merely answering their own phone made them part of the conspiracy. And there's even a law that covers that. It's illicit use of a communications device.
Tom, you ready to take a phone call?
Oh, absolutely.
Caller, you're live on the air.
Hello. I'd like to know how the prison complex prospers with having these low-time offenders in their system.
Well, more and more, there's so much economic incentive in the prison system nowadays, all the way from constructing the prisons, building the prisons. More and more, we're seeing prison industry, prison labor, where people are sent to prison and then work essentially in factories. It's almost slave labor. Chances are, if you call TWA to make a reservation, you're talking to a prisoner in a federal prison, working through
wow.
the system.
Thank you.
Victoria's Secret, which is, as you know, the women's underwear thing,
mm-hmm.
They also use prison industry. They also use prisoners to sew their goods. And more, it's becoming an economic incentive to just keep this ball rolling. People are making millions, billions of dollars off this prison population.
Well, certainly, there's a whole industry has sprung up as a result of the drug war, with corporations moving into actually building and operating private prisons and all of that as well, correct?
I believe 5 to 10% of the prisons in the federal system now are privately run corporate prisons. And we just got a news blurb just the other day that the chances of prisoners getting drugs in these corporate prisons are 3 times greater than in the state and government-run prisons. You can imagine that when you're running a prison for profit, you're going to try and cut corners as much as possible to enhance your bottom line. And cutting corners usually means cutting the quality of the food you're feeding the prisoners, cutting the amount of personnel necessary to run that prison. It's all about making money.
You know, Tom, you bring up a very interesting point, and that is that in the vast majority of prisons, as I understand it, you know, drugs are completely available if you have the money or the wherewithal to pay for them.
Absolutely.
You can get drugs. I read something where they brought in, basically a National Guard SWAT team at some prison because it was so rife with drugs and weapons that they couldn't control it anymore. And I guess I'm saying all that is a long way to getting to the point, if you can't keep drugs out of a prison, I don't understand why people keep thinking they're going to keep drugs out of the United States by doing the kinds of things that they're doing.
Yeah, it's putting just not going to happen.
Talk about some more of the statistics of the drug war, if you will, so our listeners can really get an idea of what it is that they're either actively or passively endorsing when they allow this stuff to happen.
Well, one of the things that really gets to me is most of the proponents of the drug war, which nowadays pretty much means those in government whose jobs depend on maintaining it, the rhetoric is always about for our children. Well, according to CASA, the Center for Addiction and Substance Abuse at Columbia University, there are 2.5 million children in this country with one or both parents in prison. Now, statistically, I believe 60% of those children will themselves spend some time in prison during their lifetimes. So, 2.5 million children with one or both parents in prison. And yet they say the drug war is for the children. Let's protect our children. Well, we're not protecting our children. We're damaging our children.
People don't understand, obviously, the kind of traumatic effects that having a parent separated from a child can cause.
Oh, it's horrible. Go back to my friend Susie in prison. It's been 2 years since he's seen her son. And he's now, I believe, 4 years old. This is a time when he needs his mother, and she's cooling her heels in prison.
We're talking with Tom Morlowski of the November Coalition. Caller, you're live on the air.
Well, thanks for taking my call. I work nights, and since the Good Citizens of California passed the medical marijuana initiative, I've noticed that on the AM station I listen to occasionally when I'm not listening to KVMR, the amount of anti-marijuana advertising has tripled. And I'm wondering if you could comment on this group called Society for a Drug-Free America.
I think of the Partnership for a Drug-Free America.
There you go. Thank you.
Partnership for a Drug-Free America is kind of a arm of the advertising industry that is paid by the government to promote anti-drug ads. And there's something odd about this. Think of the name, Partnership for a Drug-Free America. Their major sponsors are pharmaceutical companies, tobacco companies, liquor companies. They're trying to wipe out the competition.
You bring up a really interesting point and something that I think that bears repeating. In reading analysis of the Partnership for a Drug-Free America, they have spent, I believe, something along the lines of $10 billion in advertising since the inception of this. They have never once made an ad that warned against the alcohol or tobacco.
Oh, absolutely.
And
not.
It's a very, very important thing for people to realize that, and alcohol and tobacco, the vast majority of violent crimes are committed by people who are under the influence of alcohol, and cigarettes kill 300,000 people a year, dwarfing everything else, but yet the Partnership for a Drug-Free America does not even bother to address those two substances.
The statistics are essentially this. Between alcohol, tobacco, and legal pharmaceuticals, 500,000 deaths a year are attributed in this country. All illegal drugs combined, and the figures on this are a little bit rough, say between 8,000 and 14,000 deaths per year.
This is Full Logic Reverse. Stay tuned for contact and ordering information at the end of the program.
We're talking with Tom Murlowski of the November Coalition about the so-called war on drugs. Tom, you were sharing statistics about the drug war. Could you share some more with us, please?
Well, not really a statistic, but just the semantics, the rhetoric of the drug war. The war on drugs, a drug-free America. These sound good in theory. We get a lot of newspaper articles online and stuff. And I remember one time I got two articles in a row. One was about the Partnership for a Drug-Free America. And on the heels of that was an article, I forget the name of the pharmaceutical company that manufactures Prozac. That Prozac is one of the most profitable drugs to come down the pike in years. And they were, what they were doing is releasing, like, fruit-flavored Prozac for children.
Yes, I've heard of that.
So it's just ludicrous to even think of the term drug-free America. What they're actually saying is drugs that aren't profitable to the status quo.
You know, there was something you said, and it really caused me to take a step back, and I think I need to do that. And what that is that, you know, I said statistics, and I think it's really important that we don't fall into the trap of thinking of this as statistics. I mean, we're talking about human beings' lives here. And I think that that's a really important thing to not lose focus on. Caller, you're live on the air.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
Tom, how much does it cost to incarcerate somebody per year?
It costs about $23,000 a year to incarcerate someone.
And I know in the 70s there were first-time offenders that could opt for drug rehabilitation and maybe... Do we have those programs still?
The statistics show that out of people who need drug treatment, there are about one bed available for every 10 of them. But there's always a shiny new prison bed to put them in.
And what would that cost per year for drug rehabilitation?
Well, the RAND Corporation did a study, I believe, in 1994. And it showed that, number one, that treatment is seven times more effective than incarceration as far as recidivism. And it also showed that it cost about a quarter as much to send someone even to inpatient treatment as opposed to sending them to prison.
Uh-huh.
So by and large, statistics absolutely prove that treatment is the way to go for low-level addicted drug offenders.
Could you focus, wind up with, William F. Buckley promoted decriminalization, not legalization, but decriminalization, and maybe you could really be clear about the difference. And, you know, how many people in the country support the benefits of decriminalization and drug rehabilitation alternatives? Thank you.
Now the differences are, thank you, by the way. The difference is decriminalization says that while we'll maintain illegality of these drugs, we will treat them as something other than a criminal offense. An example of that would be court-mandated treatment for first-time possession and first-time drug crimes. whereas outright legalization, and let me preface that by saying we're not pro-legalization other than as a means to an end, other than as a means to treating this issue with compassion and reason instead of rhetoric and hysteria.
Caller, you're live on the air.
Yeah, just in case anybody's keeping score, doctors and pharmacists don't say no to drugs.
Oh, absolutely not. Absolutely not. That's,
yeah.
That's like the backbone of the whole medical industry is pharmaceuticals.
Right. And I first learned about drugs from watching TV. I found out that if aspirin didn't work, then I could take an extra strength Bufferin.
There you go.
You know, and if extra strength Bufferin didn't work, well, good Lord, they had something that would work. Always.
I don't have a statistic for this, but it's funny you mentioned aspirin. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, aspirin itself kills more people than all illegal drugs combined on a yearly basis.
That's a very interesting statistic. Caller, you're live on the air.
I just want to share my experience. I grew up in a drug-using household. My parents were heavily into heroin and methamphetamine. Anyway, we survived. The children survived, no problem. Prospered. My brother went on to become a counselor in some of these facilities and jails. And some of his clients are, for instance, have been in there 9 times, a man 56 years of age, and 27 years of his life institutionalized, strictly for drugs, never ripped off or hurt anyone. I know there are a lot of people who really care, but our system right now just isn't working.
Oh, it's insane. It's absolutely insane.
I want to thank you for your efforts, anyway.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you very much. And that bears mentioning that most of these drug crimes, there are no victims. And it gets almost down to a constitutional issue. You know, don't I have the right to do with my body what I wish?
We're talking with Tom Murlowski of the November Coalition. We're talking about the so-called war on drugs. Caller, you're live on the air.
Yes. Doctors and pharmacists don't say no to drugs. I want to nominate that for the bumper sticker of the week next week.
Well, that we might actually be able to get that on. I think we'll have to get it up on a bumper sticker and put it on there.
That's good. Doctors and pharmacists don't say no to drugs.
I think that's really good. We have a bumper sticker contest that we run here every week, so we may actually have our winner. I don't know. Don't let that discourage you from entering, because we want to have the competition continue to go on.
So one of the bumper sticker ideas we've toyed with is, it's not a war on drugs, it's a war on people.
I think that's a good one, and we may get yours in for the winning entry as well, Tom.
By and large, the bulk of the prison population are illiterate. I believe 60% of offenders are illiterate in prison. And an awful lot of them come out of the inner city. It's basically a racist war. Here's kind of an alarming statistic for you. 1 out of 3 young black men in this country is either in prison or on parole. And keep in mind, on the federal level and on a lot of state levels, once you go to prison, once you're convicted of a felony, you lose the right to vote. So we're disenfranchising an entire segment of the population.
We're talking with Tom Murlowski of the November Coalition. Tom, let me ask you, because you moved into the issue of constitutional issues, and I mean, it seems to me that if one pays attention, as a result of the so-called war on drugs, we are giving up a huge amount of our constitutional protections.
Absolutely.
On a daily
Absolutely.
Basis. Talk about that.
Well, I mean, you can pick your amendment to the Bill of Rights. we were talking earlier about the medical marijuana initiative in California. Now, here is an initiative that was passed by the majority of California voters. And the federal government pretty much stepped in and said, well, we don't care what the state wants. The federal government says it's illegal, and that's the way it goes. Now, to me, that's a direct violation of the 10th Amendment, which is, unless it's specifically delineated in the Constitution, all other issues are left to the state's discretion. And believe me, there's nothing in the Constitution specifically dealing with medical marijuana.
Well, that certainly seems pretty straightforward to me.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, like I say, pick your amendment. Cruel and unusual punishment. You were talking earlier about multiple life sentences for a first-time nonviolent offense. If that's not cruel and unusual punishment, I don't know what is.
We also have the issue of increased surveillance and the eroding of constitutional protections that keep the state somewhat at bay, and those protections were put there exactly for that purpose when the Founding Fathers drafted the document, they realized that they needed to have checks and balances on the power of the state.
Absolutely.
We're talking with Tom Murlowski of the November Coalition. Tom, I don't know if you got the email that I sent you about the issue of the drug dogs at the high school. Can you talk a little bit about that from the perspective of the November Coalition?
You know, I believe it was on 2020, last week, that they did a segment on a teacher in South Carolina, I believe. Her name was Sherry Hearns, and she was like the teacher of the year, and she was one of her subjects was teaching constitutional law, and she was a vehement opponent to in this school they were having the regular drug searches where they'd line all the students up, they'd come in with the dope dogs, go through everyone's luggage, go through everyone's lockers, and her problem was with you know, having these stormtroopers treating these students as if they were all criminals. And as it turned out, she was like a vehement opponent of this. During one of these searches, they supposedly found like a roach in her ashtray out in her car.
The CIA is back.
Oh, we've got some kind of funky problem with our phone line.
We'll try and do what we can. If we can bear with it a little bit and it clears up, we'll try and make this work. As I understand it, she was actually also harassed because she refused to submit to drug testing, claiming that it was a violation of her rights for them to even suggest that she should.
Absolutely. What happened was school policy dictated that any teacher who was accused of any kind of a drug crime had to submit to a urinalysis test within 2 hours, and she refused. Now, the next day, at her defense attorney's request, she did undergo a drug analysis and tested clean. But because she refused within that two-hour parameter, she was fired. Now, this is a woman who was the teacher of the year for her state. She was 3 years away from retirement. The student body was in an uproar with her treatment. And by the way, they never did produce the roach they supposedly found in her car. It was, the sample was so small that we completely destroyed it during testing.
Well, somewhat convenient, I would think.
Exactly.
Caller, you're live on the air.
Hi. The most annoying aspect of that whole story to me, actually, there's a variety of things that are highly annoying. The thing that really got me moving right early in the story was the opening shot. They referred to the police operation as a lockdown.
Yes.
Which is the kind of term they use for craven criminals locked up in a prison someplace. You know, this is to get these kids used to the idea that them are coming to get you, and you better do what they say.
Yeah, what's that doing to these impressionable young minds?
Hey, it's turning them against them. So it's actually a good thing. Anyway, keep up the good work.
Yeah, good point. Yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you for calling in. Tom, we just have a few minutes left, and what I wanted to ask you to do was perhaps talk a little bit more about the CD that will be coming out, and then also to let the listeners know how they could get more information about the November Coalition.
Okay, be glad to. The second CD, we don't have it scheduled yet. I believe in the next paper we're going to have a call out to the prisoners for, you know, send us more messages because the first one was so impactful. Excuse me. And basically the idea is simple. Let America know that these people in prison are human beings, that they hurt, that they fear, that they miss their loved ones. And like I say, it's been pretty much a roaring success so far. We've had responses across the nation. And one real quick point I want to make.
Please do.
Just in the war on drugs in general, drug use over the past 30 years, and we call the modern war on drugs usually as having been started in the late 60s, early 70s under Richard Nixon. So we've had 30 years of the drug war. We've spent over $1 trillion, and drug use has remained almost completely stable. In other words, we have not put a dent in the problem. But we've spent $1 trillion, and we've got a record number of people in prison.
If people wanted to get more information about the November Coalition?
We are online at www.november.org. Feel free to look us up. I'm also the webmaster, and I'm quite proud of our effort. We've got a very comprehensive website. We also publish a bi-monthly newspaper called The Razor Wire, 6 times a year, and it just gets better and better every issue.
Tom Murlowski of the November Coalition, thank you for being with us on the program. Hopefully we can have you on later in the year to take a look at what's happening regarding the whole war on drugs and try and keep the voices and images of the prisoners of it in our ears and in our hearts.
That's basically the whole thing. These are human beings, and most of them have never hurt anyone, and they're having their lives destroyed, and it's just plain wrong.
Tom Murlowski of the November Coalition. Thank you for being with us on the program.
Thank you very much, Mike. I enjoyed it.
You're welcome.
That's it for this edition of the program. If you'd like more information about Full Logic Reverse or how to order CD copies of the program, you can contact us via email at flr@jps.net or write Full Logic Reverse in care of KVMR FM 401 Spring Street, Nevada City, California 95959 in the United States of America. Our music is by Rick Payne. The program is produced at Full Logic Reverse Studios. My name's Mike Thornton, and I invite you to join us next time for another edition of Full Logic Reverse.